I myself am quite tolerable. Practical. Tolerable practical magician.
Welcome to Lost Hope. My name's Bubba, and with me, as always, is Mr. Catfish.
Oh, well, thank you for that very exciting introduction.
Catfish, how you doing?
I am excited. This is a new enterprise that we're going on, and we've had a little bit of a free taste of it, and I'm looking forward to this. I may be more enthusiastic about this project than I thought.
If you are a new listener to Lost Hope, the Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell podcast, it's set up where we both read the books. I read the book and loved it, and Catfish, you read the book and you found it
boring.
We want to do some housekeeping right up front.
Ooh.
If you like Game of Thrones or the Song of Ice and Fire novels, please check out our podcast titled The Joffrey of Podcast on iTunes. Download it. As well as if you're into FX's The Strain.
Wow, we've got a lot of work that we're going to be doing this summer for absolutely no remuneration.
That's right. And so if you like FX's TV show The Strain, based on that wonderful book by Guillermo del Toro, check out our podcast entitled Got Your Milk on iTunes. Coming up on this podcast, we're 1 week away from BBC America releasing this 7-part adaptation of Susanna Clarke's novel On the World. And we've got two exciting interviews. We've got an interview with the author who wrote the screenplay based on Susanna Clarke's novel. I've got an interview with Peter Harness. He's written for Doctor Who episodes. He's written an adaptation of Kate Atkinson's great
books. How did you sucker him into this interview?
He started following me on Twitter. And once you do that, you owe me. And so I asked him if he'd give us an interview, and he did. I also reached out to a great writer from Tor.com who last winter did a great reread of the novel, and she did a kind of a 5-part, 6-part reread discussion of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, and I'll be talking to her about what she expects, what she's excited about in this 7-part.
And who is this writer from Tor.com?
It's Kate Nephew, Catfish, or as we say it in honor of a character on this adaption called Drawlight. Drawlight is a great hype man. He introduces you like this. So we've got a great interview with Tor.com writer Kate Nephew. That actually wasn't Drawlight enough. Let me try it again. Mrs. Kate Nephew!
Perfect.
Everybody, this week.
Yes.
Before I did these interviews, I went to Screen Actors Guild, had a special screening.
Yes.
Of the first two episodes of Jonathan Strange and
Mr. Norrell. And then we got to listen to Eddie Marsan,
right,
who was playing Mr. Norrell on the series, answer some questions. He answered one of my questions, and he answered one of Bubba's questions. So basically, we went even on that bet.
We did. We both got a question in. And I want to say, Catfish, we don't want to spoil our reviews because we'll be giving reviews of each episode. But based on the first two episodes, do you have any general impressions you could give anybody without kind of giving it a star system?
I liked it.
Okay.
I also feel that it's more interesting than the book, although it is, again, kind of, it's kind of a slow build. But also what I find they do a lot is they make you figure things out.
Oh,
so you have
right.
to be kind of an active viewer. So I think that engages you more. Also, I'm wondering, we have been searching for a hero to guide our lives ever since we lost Joffrey. And,
right.
And I think the man with the thistle down hair just might be our guiding light.
He might be. One thing that you made note of, Catfish, after the screening of these two episodes is there might be times, listeners, where if you're not very familiar with different regional dialects from England, you might want to turn on your closed caption to understand some of this stuff.
Yes, I would leave it on at the bottom and then just not look at it. Sometimes when I have the closed caption on, that's all I do is read it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe watch it without it, and then if you need to go back, if you have one of those modern devices where you can go backwards, you might want to try to put it on there.
Okay, and the final thing I want to say without spoiling it is I really enjoyed both these two episodes. They are a little slow. They're like the book where they're slow building stuff up. Hopefully, for me, I love the novel, and they'll take off like they did, like I found the novel took off. But the one thing they definitely do is it's foreshadowing like crazy. If listen to any of our other podcasts, and we mentioned this might be foreshadowing, drink. You could really get drunk on these two episodes the way they set everything up. The final thing, Catfish, I want to mention is this has been airing in the United Kingdom. BBC One has been airing this already. As we record this, they've already had three episodes out. And I wanted to put something out to you, and I wanted you to know this, that after the first episode aired in BBC, it got 4 million viewers of the first episode.
That's pretty good.
It lost almost 2 million viewers to the second episode.
Oh, my.
So the BBC lost almost, not quite, but almost 2 million viewers from week one to week two. Do you think this is a show that can survive week to week, or are people better binging it?
Oh, wow. I mean, I enjoyed seeing the two episodes back to back. Again, maybe it is because it's a little slow. Maybe it would benefit more from binge watching.
Okay.
Now, one of the things that Eddie Marson did say was they spent about £15 million, $21 million on it. You can see it's a beautiful production.
It really is.
Wow, that is stunning to me. Well, like I said, it's a little bit slow, but it seems worthwhile. I will say this, there, when we see the Man with the Thistle down here, they do both seeing and hearing through sight and sound. They make that very interesting, and it's kind of surprising at this day and age that somebody could do something that's interesting, considering I think everything's been done. But it's really nice the way they do it when we see the Man with the Thistle down here. It's creepy.
I agree. It is.
Creepy.
And just to going one further bit on the, hey, we've got to get this out there, we've got to get people engaged, BBC America, just last night, Friday night, late night, put the premiere episode on YouTube.
Whoa.
So now, if you ask me, why is BBC America doing this?
Is BBC America doing this?
If you had asked me that, Catfish, the way I would respond to that is they know that maybe they're not doing a great job hyping up the series. Hmm. And so you would only put it on YouTube for two reasons, I think. You think it's good, but also because if you think it's good and you want the word out there, so maybe it'll spread and get more viewers.
Right, right, right.
So people, you can go right now to BBC America's YouTube page and watch the first episode. We will be putting up our review of the first episode of Susanna Clarke's Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell adaption next week, and we'll be doing the 7 weeks that it's on there. But just so you know, if you want to, go ahead. It looks great. It's without commercials on YouTube right now.
Hmm. Wow, without commercials? Well, they are really giving away the cow there.
All right, so everybody, let's jump in. If you want to give us your reviews, your opinions, if you've watched this first episode on YouTube, how can people contact you on Twitter, Catfish?
They can hit me up at CJGman67. How can they reach you, Bubba?
Well, you can always find me, just like this screenwriter, Peter Harness, did. You can find me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FITTNTRIM, at Fit and Trim on Twitter. So now let's get to that first interview with the BBC's adaption writer, the screenwriter, Mr. Peter Harness.
Well, I got involved with the novel first, really. I'd read the novel by the time the adaptation came along, but not too long before. And I'd kind of heard a whisper that the adaptation might be in the air, so I read it, and I kind of realized that was something that I had to do. Because I decided, I've done a lot of adaptations recently, like Case Histories and Wallander, and I'd kind of decided to myself that I was going to stop for a while and do some original stuff, but then I couldn't possibly turn down the chance of doing Strange and Norrell. I would have been an idiot. I was an idiot to do it, but...
Well, I was about to say, you don't even have to read the book when you see how big it is, and it's so massive. Did you know when you saw that hunk of a novel that it would be a miniseries as opposed to a movie? And did you know how many episodes? Like, how early in it did you come on?
Well, we definitely knew it was going to be a miniseries as opposed to a film because it had been through... It had really been through the process of trying to get itself made as a film, because it was shortly after it was published, it was optioned by New Line, And it went through a couple of different writers. Christopher Hampton wrote a draft of a screenplay, and Julian Fellowes wrote another. And I haven't read those, but it just always struck me that it would be impossible to do it as a feature film, because you really have to tell the whole story, because all of the different characters and their journeys intersect with each other, and all of those stories are important in building it up. And really the kind of texture of it is as much a character as you know, the way the book feels is as much a character as anybody else. And I just don't think you could get that into 2 hours. It would have had to have really, it would have had to have been a completely different story. It wouldn't have been Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. I don't know what it would have been, but it wouldn't have been Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. So the idea definitely was to do it as a mini series. And I think that, I can't remember precisely, but before we got the kind of eventual green light to make it from the BBC, I think I'd written the first two episodes. And therefore, I think we'd probably discussed it and decided that it would probably be 6 hours. And when we went to the BBC, they asked what length we thought it would be. And we said 6, although they did say you can have 8 if you want. We said, no, it's definitely 6. It's definitely 6. And then I went away and I started writing in earnest for a few weeks. And I realized that I wouldn't get it into 6, that we'd have to have another one. I spread that around, not in any way expecting that we'd be allowed to have another hour, but they agreed. And so I think it's perfect length really for what it is. I mean, we could have chosen to spread it over many seasons, but we'd have had to invent loads of things, and it wouldn't have had the same kind of degree of urgency, and it wouldn't have felt like the same kind of story. I mean, we see it really as strangely, having said that it wouldn't ever be a film, we really kind of see it as a film in 7 parts, a 7-hour film, and you know, which starts very much once upon a time and ends up not so very happily ever after. Yes, so that was a long way of saying that I always knew that it was going to be a mystery.
We have listeners, I assume, to the podcast, people who are watching the miniseries right now in the UK and about to watch it here in the United States, who haven't read the books. When people asked you about the project, how did you describe this project?
Well, I mean, the short pitch is that it's a story set in a version of England where magic once existed and died out mysteriously 300 years ago. And it's set during the Napoleonic Wars, and it's about the two magicians who bring magic back to England and what goes wrong. And that's, I suppose, that's the short kind of story outline for it. But in terms of texture, it's like a Jane Austen book or a Charles Dickens novel, but with magic in it. I'm not going to mention it. I will then go ahead and mention Harry Potter. But I really hate the kind of Harry Potter for grown-ups comparison, actually, because it's not. It's its own thing. You know, Susanna Clarke, when she was asked to define what genre it was when the book came out, she said it was something new. And it is something new. It's a BBC period drama, but with kind of Hollywood special effects and with kind of intense fantasy sequences. But it's not really like something that you've seen before, and it may take you a bit of time to kind of adjust to the world, because it's a very unusual world. But I hope that if you stick with it, then you'll gradually get seduced by it. You'll get seduced by its dark, mysterious, dangerous magic.
When I read the books, I think my favorite character was Jonathan Strange. And now that I've seen the promos, I honestly think, and I haven't seen any episodes yet, I've just seen what BBC America is showing us, I honestly think now my favorite character is Drawlight, just because he goes, Mr. Norrell! It's like a kind of a wonderful, you know, hype man he's doing. Did you have a favorite character in the book? And now that it's completed, like, were you surprised by anything where you're like, oh, this came out like that? That's really shocking, surprising, fun.
I think my favorite character in the book was probably Childermas. And I think he's a lot of people's favorite character from the book, because he just seems to know everything, and he's very mysterious. And yes, you never really get to the bottom of him, but he's also very funny. And yes, I suppose I loved all the characters from the book, but I think Childermas just kind of, you know, nudged his hedge root shaped face out in front. As far as the TV series goes, I don't really have a favorite, because they're all such vivid characters that just come straight out at you, that they were all great fun to write. And I found them all funny and endearing in their own little ways. Some of the minor characters who I've maybe developed a bit more, I enjoyed writing. I enjoyed writing the Duke of Wellington very much, because he's very rude and funny. And there's a couple of characters called Gatcombe and Tantony, who turn up. If you remember them from the book, they meet Mr. Strange in the Bedford while he's playing billiards, and they keep on kind of returning, because I thought they were lovely characters. But really I did love them all. And there are some characters in the TV series who are different to the way they are in the book. I think the ladies are different. Arabella and Lady Pole have slightly more forceful characters and slightly longer stories than they do in the book. And I also think Strange is different. Strange is, in the book, he's very much a magician first and a husband second. But really for the TV series, it's his love for Arabella, which is more important to him than anything else. And magic is a distant second, reasonably distant. So yes, they've changed a bit, and that's been fun to do. And that's been a rewarding thing to write. Yes, it was a reasonably expensive show to make, but, it's not a lot more expensive than a lot of drama that comes out of the BBC. We knew that we would be struggling, as you're always struggling against a budget. You know, you've never got enough money. Even if you're making a $200 million movie, you've never got enough money. But I think we were able to make it look good, and we were able to put all of the money on the screen, because the director, Toby, was there from the beginning of the process. And I was there from the beginning of the process, and the producer, Nick Hirschkorn, was there from the beginning of the process. So we collaborated very kind of closely on how to develop it and how to realize it and how we were actually going to make it. So I suppose I did have a producer's hat on, but I also had a director's hat on, and each of those guys had a writer's hat on. So we were sharing and discussing how to do it and the best ways of doing it. And I think that the expediency of doing it has led us to focus the story a lot more, and for all of those magical sequences to really earn their place, and they do earn their place, and we're not kind of cavalier with them. If we hadn't have had that kind of closeness of collaboration from day one, we just wouldn't have been able to make it. I mean, we only just managed to make it as it was, but if we hadn't have done it in that way, if it hadn't really have come out of the three of us, then we wouldn't have got anywhere near making it. And I think one of the most rewarding things about doing Strange and Norrell has been that it's been a very kind of discursive and collaborative process, and we've all felt able to chip in with ideas at any point in the process, and we've all been allowed to tread on each other's toes. And when the actors came in and the designers and the various kind of technical heads of department, they were similarly free to kind of contribute their ideas. And I think it's ended up being something that a lot of people feel a lot of ownership over, and they're very proud of. And we're all kind of proud of each other's work. So it's been a very pleasant experience in that way. I mean, it was quite frequently utter hell to do, but it's we're all fairly close now because of it, I think.
My last question is, the novel is famous for its footnotes. So is there any great footnote you want to give me about the making of it, the writing of it, that, you know, you would have down at the bottom of the page, any side story that people would love to know about as they watch it?
That's an interesting one. I don't know, actually. I don't know. Many of the side stories are probably not repeatable, or they're probably vaguely libelous. But I think if we're talking about footnotes, I'd really like. Unfortunately, we don't footnote the TV series. We've always had that plan that we might do an extra kind of half-hour program or something with the footnotes in it. But to be honest, it took us all this time and all of the money and all of the effort to actually get the series on screen. So at the end of the process, I think people should just go back and read the book. And we'd all be very happy to think that one of the end results of the series was that people went back and discovered the book for themselves, because I think it's one of the best books which has ever been written. And maybe one day another one will come and we'll make another epic TV series of it. And that would be a very nice thing to think about in the future.
Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And when you've finally seen it, do kind of feel free to get in touch with me again, and I'll you can ask whatever questions come out of your viewing of it.
Mrs. Kate Nephew,
say there's somebody who hasn't read this big hunkin' book, but they're excited about the ads. What do you say to people who haven't read the books to get them interested in the story?
There are a lot of things. I suppose it would depend on what they're interested in. One thing I might say is that here is a single volume which has an enormous depth of world building and inventiveness. It has a very rich texture of this imagined history, both on a history level and also on kind of a sort of a fairy tale level about the kingdoms of fairy and the magic that Clark has created. So that's one thing that appeals to me. And I think, I'm hoping some of that will translate into the TV show, although that's going to be hard because of the nature of screen as opposed to the page. Another thing I might say is that it's about Regency era England, but about making it better. And, you know, it does focus on some very rich men, I actually looked up the amounts that were quoted in the book for Strange and Norrell's wealth, and it's an astonishing amount of money. But it's also very important, the women, a free black man, there are a few Jewish characters, and they are extremely important to the story, and the social differences there are something the story is aware of and interested in. So that would be another thing. Here's Regent's England, which is an interesting time period, but trying to make it better. Then I guess the third thing that I'm hoping might translate from the book to the show, and this is trickier, is that the nature of the magic is really cool. In the book, at least, Clark is really good at a very magical magic, for lack of a better word, a very sort of mysterious sense of wonder kind of magic. Again, I don't know how well that's going to come across on screen, but I have hopes. We'll see.
Well, the one thing that the screenwriter, Peter Harness, really felt was the quote-unquote log line that some people use of Harry Potter for adults. He felt that was kind of dismissive and unfair to the rich world that Susanna Clarke has created. But let me say, spoiler alert, having seen the first couple episodes, there is some of that whimsy that people enjoy in Harry Potter. So there is some of that lightness even in the books. Like, there are laughs to be had.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that the reread for Tor.com showed me is that a lot of it is really, really very funny. One of the things I am going to miss about the show is that the omniscient narrator of the book is an understated character in her own right, and she is, I think she's quite funny. But there's definitely humor in the characters as well. Which made me, the 1 minute trailer made me a little nervous about this actually, because it was all very dark and this frantic music and so forth. But if you said that the writer has recognized the whimsy in it, then that makes me hopeful.
Okay, now I do have to bring up my co-host on the podcast, read the book and found it kind of too slow and too boring. What do you say to people who've maybe tried the book, even though it got rave reviews, but it kind of did have that issues with it, that it is kind of a character piece at times almost?
I mean, the book definitely makes a conscious decision to start out by hoping to hook you with the question, why is there no magic in England? It's prophesied to be restored. How is it going to be restored? I mean, I think that the characters it starts out with, even though they're minor characters, Mr. Segundus and his friend, I like them. They carried me through. But there is that definitely the choice. I mean, Strange, Jonathan Strange doesn't show up fully in the book for quite a long time. He's mentioned, he's actually the first magician named in the book, but he doesn't show up as an actual character for quite a long time. I suspect that the series is going to have to jiggle those timelines somewhat, because the history and the prose are obviously not as fully accessible for it. And also, I mean, 7 parts, it sounds long, but there's actually quite a lot that does happen. I mean, even in just the first few chapters, there are statues that start talking and raise, you know, centuries-old murder mysteries. There's, and by the end, the climax of the book actually takes up quite a long time because it's been building for so long and there's so many things that are now coming forth. So, you know, I expect that live drama is going to have to change the pacing somewhat because the things that the opening of the book is relying on aren't as accessible to it.
Well, yeah, I want to follow up on a point you mentioned earlier about how the character of the narrator, she is so informative in the books. And slight spoiler alert, it begins with maybe a minute of a voiceover, but the first 2 episodes don't really have that character in. So there are going to be things, great things from the novel that may be missing in the show. One of my questions was, do you have any thoughts on how maybe the television presentation could actually improve upon or really bring out other highlights of the book?
I mean, I think the things that I think screen might do better at, or at least do well at, I think are likely to be the characters, because as vivid as I find the characters in the book, there's a lot to be said for you know, actors saying the words. And for me, this might be a little bit tricky because I actually have some fairly vivid imaginings of what some of these scenes might sound like. And that's always a moment of dissonance when your what's in your head meets up with what's on the screen. But I think that that might be a promising thing. But I'm also worried, conversely, that a lot of the minor characters who give the book its richness might end up being sidelined, especially sidelined in favor of Strange and Oral, when it's really important, I think, that we get a lot of a really wide range of women, in particular in the book, from different social classes and different stages of life, showing that there were more options than being the angel in the house that Arabella, Jonathan's wife, eventual wife, is. So that's both my hopes that the characters will be even more vivid, and also my fears that some of them might crowd out others for time, or because it seems easier to go with the characters in the title rather than really exploring, you know, a bunch of the minor characters or even the not so minor characters like Lady Pole or Stephen Black.
Once again, I don't want to spoil it for anybody. I think in the first two episodes, those two you mentioned do get their time. It's pretty good. What I would say is that you did this great reread, and I followed along on tour. And so did one thing I didn't have to be honest, I didn't always do is I didn't always read everybody's comments. What do you think the community of fans of this book are excited about? What are their favorite kind of moments that they want to see on screen?
The comments were great. I have been super lucky in both the Tolkien rereads and in this reread. They showed me a lot of things I hadn't thought of. One thing that comes to mind, there's a tarot reading, an important tarot reading in the first third of the book. And somebody specifically called that out in comments and said, oh yeah, that would be awesome. And now that you say that, I can see it in my mind. As for other things that people specifically mentioned, people are very excited about the Raven King. Last I checked, and I haven't checked recently, an actor hadn't been announced for that. I assume he'll be appearing. I don't know. Maybe he won't be. That might be too much of a spoiler too, so I apologize, and you can cut that part out. But you know, the things that I particularly remember wanting to see as I was reading the book are a couple of pretty late scenes of Jonathan in Venice. One conversation he has with a character in an attic, and then another conversation he has giving a message. But early on, there are two really little ones that I think, if they make it in, if they stay in, and I think will tell me a lot about how this adaptation is going to go. One is the talking statues that I mentioned, because it's a really beautiful, eerie moment in the books. And magic is tough to translate to screen. I was not a fan of how they came through on the screen in the Lord of the Rings movies, for instance. And then the other thing is a little tiny bit of social humor when when Drawlight and Lascelles are these two social butterflies, I guess you could call them, sort of, in London, are talking all about how they know Narelle, and then he shows up. He's listening to this conversation, and then he introduces himself. And it's a pretty predictable comic beat, but it was funny in the book all the same. And it was a little funny moment, but it was just that kind of small humor that I'm hoping would be a good signal for how the adaptation is going to go. You don't have to tell me if they make it in or not. I'll live.
Yeah, I you don't know how bad I want to say respond, but I don't want to spoil you either.
Yeah.
I apologize. I've never read The Lord of the Rings, so I've only read this one, and I followed your reread. Knowing that you did a Lord of the Rings, was that before the films came out?
No, that was actually after. It started in 2008 or so. That was after, but it was separated from them by a good bit.
Well, one of the things, even though I never read those books, one of the things I've always known just from being out in the world is that there were certain things removed from that book, like the character of Tom Bombadil, removed from the film adaptation. And so this is hard to mention. We want everybody to be positive. But is there anything that would, like, break your heart? You mentioned two things you definitely want to see, but is there a character maybe that would break your heart if the adaptation just chose to remove them for, like you were mentioning earlier, focusing on, quote-unquote, the two named characters?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm aware that my third favorite character, who's on the minor side, John Segundis, you know, I've seen the trailer, I know he's in it. And, you know, you can't properly have a plot without Lady Pole or Stephen Black. I don't think, you know, I really adore a lot of the minor characters, but I can't think of any of them that would break my heart if they weren't in it. By the way, if you decide to read Lord of the Rings, this is, I just have to tell you this, start with chapter one. There's a whole lot of stuff before that. Ignore it all. That it was not necessary for Tolkien to put it there. Start with chapter one. It actually opens pretty well if you skip all the introductory stuff.
Oh my goodness, I'm going to maybe want to edit that out so there's no nerd rage sent at you for this.
Oh, I've said that before.
Oh, okay, all right. Where does this rank in your favorite books of all time? Name some books that maybe it ranks with, or other things that, like, let my listeners get an idea of your favorite books that this kind of ranks amongst, if it's one of your favorite books. But then also, are there certain novels that this compares to, you would think?
Yeah, no, I think this is probably my favorite book that I've read since 2000 or so. My list of favorite books tends to, it's sort of a list, and a lot of them I haven't dared go back to because I'm afraid they won't be as good as I remember, because they were important to me. But, you know, in terms of stuff I've read recently, but not so recently that I can't, that I don't have enough perspective on them, I would say this is one of my very favorite books, because it has the sort of depth of world building that I love about Lord of the Rings, and also the excellent writing. I mean, this was one of the things I learned on the Tolkien rereads, is that he actually was very good at the sentence level on up, which I didn't expect to find, and I was really pleased about. And Clark's prose is amazing. She just, there is something good on every page. You know, it has characters that I'm really into, and I tend to be a pretty character-focused reader as well. It has the interest on, you know, here are structural inequalities, here's their effect on people, here's a way that maybe might improve that. And it has such really interesting magic. So because it has so much of that, it's so good for me on a number of different levels. It's kind of hard for me to think of, but because it's doing so much of that, it's sort of hard to think of other things to compare it to. There are things that I like for their magic, like Robin McKinley's Spindle's End. And I've also just finished reading Naomi Novik's new novel, Uprooted, which have really great magical magic, for lack of a better word. Sort of very, you know, very not necessarily intuitive, but magic that feels mysterious and fantastic in both senses of the word. You know, there are lots of books that have great characters and so forth, but, you know, I think if I was going to recommend to somebody a book, you know, if you like this, you should read that, I'd want to know first what they liked about this or about that, and then I could go from there.
Final thing, I've got to go on a crazy one, and this is the question I asked you about Peter Harness earlier. This whole book, you could love it for a million reasons, but you can also love it for the footnotes. Is there any footnotes that you would have about your tour reread?
No, I don't. I'm fairly sure that, well, I wasn't popular enough to get people trying to do firsts, and I'm pretty sure the tour.com team tends to stomp on that because it sort of sets off. No, that's fine. No, our comments were great. A footnote about the reread.
Like maybe something you didn't get in that you always meant to, or
really, when I think about the reread, I think about enjoying it enormously, but also staying up to like 1:30 in the morning to finish my draft, because, you know, towards the end of the Lord of the Rings reread, I was slipping. I was nowhere near 1 week between posts. Some of them went months and months, and I felt really bad about that because it was detrimental to the whole project, and it also just loomed over me this weight of guilt and thing I should be doing. So, you know, I made up a schedule for this and posted it. It was the first post. Like, here's the introduction. Here's the schedule. We're sticking this come hell or high water. But it's a big book. You know, I was doing something like 70-odd chunks at a time. And it sounds ridiculous, but summarizing concisely actually takes longer than just sort of writing down everything you can think about of what happened. So I'd be editing down the summary, so it wouldn't be enormous, and then, you know, pulling together all my thoughts. So I was... I might have been too ambitious in my schedule. So really, you know, I loved it. It was so much fun. I learned a lot from my commenters who suggested a lot of great things to me. But it was, there were a lot of late nights. And, you know, that's partly my fault. I tend to be a night owl, which is really hard when you also have a day job and two little kids. It's not really, those are not really compatible. One thing I thought was interesting that you mentioned before we started recording was this idea that Strange and Norell were kind of, you know, the complementary halves of the brain. And, you know, we had theories in the reread about how that was important for the, you know, the prophesied return of magic. So I'm going to be interested to see how that plays out in the TV show. Also, there are times when I really, really, really dislike Mr. Norell, and I'm going to be interested to see how mad I get at him and how I end up feeling overall. Because one thing that Clark is really good at is sympathy for the characters and making them rounded even when you hate their guts. So that is also something I'm looking forward to.
Boy, let me say... I don't want to say anything, but there'll be some hateful moments.
Well, I know there are going to be. I know there are definitely. There have to be hateful moments because otherwise, there's no plot. It'll just be interesting to see, you know, how the emotional effect of them on screen as opposed to me and my and the page.
And I want to say as a footnote, I loved your reread so much, but my footnote would be that I want to call it Holiday Break was just so long and. It was so long. I was so ready.
I'm sorry, but the thing is, it felt with Christmas and New Year's, and we traveled with family, and also, I could do a Jonathan Strange post, or I could do a post about the last Hobbit movie in 1 week. I couldn't do both, and you know, I felt an obligation to finish up the Hobbit reread as well. So yeah, it was long, but I left you guys with fanfic and fan art, so you had something to do.
It was wonderful, but I was following along with you, and so I was like, oh, come on. Damn you, New Year's.
Yeah. I'm sorry about that, but I'm glad you did enjoy it. I always enjoy hearing from people who liked it. It's nice to know that that it was being read. And, you know, if people want to pop in now, I'm still subscribed to all the comments, and I at least will read them and respond to your comments no matter how late you are. I'll also be doing a sort of overall book TV show comparison for the site, probably after it's done airing, I think, probably after the US version is done airing. And of course, they're doing episode recaps as the British versions go up.
All right. Well, how can my listeners, number one, you're on tour, but how can they find your work? And do you have any great other projects coming up?
The best thing to do, because there's only one of me, is just to Google me. So Kate, and then Nevu is N as in Nancy, E, P as in Peter, V as in Victor, E, U. Or you could just go to tor.com and then copy and paste what you find there, because I know that that is not an easy name to spell. At the moment, I'm going to be writing a review of Uprooted, Naomi Novik's book for Tor. And then when the last Temeraire book of her series, the Dragon series, is announced, I'm planning to do a reread of the series for Tor.com of all of those, not chapter by chapter. There's too many of those. It's probably going to be, you know, each book is in three volumes. It's probably going to be volume by volume, but I am currently head deep in A Giant History of China as research for that. So I'm looking forward to that a lot.
All right, well, I'm going to say goodbye to you, and this is a slight spoiler if you've seen the promos. I'm going to say goodbye to you just like Draw Light on the show says goodbye. Thank you very much, KFU!
Okay, that's going to end this edition of Lost Hope, a Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norell podcast. I want to give a special... big thank you to our two great guests, Tor.com writer Kate Nevu and Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norell screenwriter Peter Harness. Please subscribe to us in iTunes or Stitcher or your favorite podcast store. And I want to quickly go over four great new reviews we just got in the U.S. iTunes store. We got a 5-star review from someone titled U.S. Who Cast. Says, given this pairing's history, and I think they mean Catfish and I, he says, I expect a great podcast that it meets the expectation of any godlike fictional monarch. Well, thank you very much. We also got one from Bob in Princeton, 5 stars as well. And he says, as Neil Gaiman wrote, quote, closing Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell after 800 pages, my only regret is that it wasn't twice the length. The same is true of this magical podcast. Oh, well, thank you for the lie, Bob in Princeton. We got somebody on iTunes called PMAC06 who says this podcast is magic. 5 stars. Keep up the good work. And our final new review on iTunes says, just thank you. 5 stars from BB in GA. And they say, so glad you are podcasting this show. This is based on one of my favorite books, and I'm hoping for a good adaptation. Can't wait to hear you take it on. I'm a longtime follower of your terrific podcast. Thank you so much. Everybody, we are trying to suck up to BBC America to get some wonderful prizes that we can give away. And the way you can win some of those prizes, if we can ever get them out of BBC America's hands, is to give us a written review like these great people did on iTunes. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, please write to me on Twitter. Tell me what you think of the series so far. My name's Bubba. My Twitter handle is @fitandtrim. That's FitenTrim, @fitandtrim on Twitter. And get ready. It starts up this Saturday, June 13th on BBC America. We'll see you next week.